Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel speeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Yeah, there we go. Hey, everyone, we got a fact checker. Okay, hi, everyone. It's Jungle Jim coming out with another episode of Suspendables. And so we got Stevie back in Ottawa. Rusty Cortinel here with us once again. How are you, Russ?
I'm good. And you have there's a tone in your voice of about, I think you're going to start gloating that you might have won a bet.
I did. I won a big bet. Yeah.
Oh, one in a row, ladies and gentlemen.
Because as you nicknamed me in Vegas when I'd walk up behind you playing blackjack, I tap you on the shoulder and you go, "Oh, it's the cooler fuck cash out, here we go." Our producer, young Stevie, who I do the Ottawa podcast with, and a couple other ones that he helps out with, or another one, the curling one that he's helping out with. So we like to bet, we like the action, Rusty, and Stevie is he'll put you and I to shame. Rusty, with knowledge, sports knowledge. He's been involved in sports.
That wouldn't be freaking hard.
No, it wouldn't be. But he's exceptional, okay? One of the top guys in the country in terms of sports broadcasting and the stuff he knows, okay? So just goes to show, I said, well, we'll bet. We'll start to make some bets. I think we started it with we did a couple last year for something, but we started fresh. He had to pay me last year. So we started fresh with the NFL playoff games, and he's an NFL guru.
Okay? Yeah.
Stevie, Rusty, 4-1, probably through the playoffs, something like that. Okay. And I get, so I get up $60, uh-huh. Kept doubling up. You see, it was $5 a game. Then kept doubling up. So I got a fresh 60 going into the Super Bowl, and I wanted KC. Okay. I wanted Kansas City. I said, that's the soft.
Of course Kansas, you did.
Yeah, of course I did.
Kansas you City can pick was the only, loser every freaking time.
I know. And I was going to phone you and tell you, Russ, go the other way.
I wish you had told me because I went Kansas City too.
And I thought the line was soft at +3. I said, no way, this guy, Mahomes, you can't. Stevie goes, I want Kansas City. I said, okay, but it's double or nothing. I want to get rid of this. Okay. Sure enough, I said, okay, begrudgingly, I will take Tampa Bay. So we double it. So I'm up $120 now.
Nice. So
that's your, Rusty, that's your money and my money. And each week we're going to hammer Stevie with a bet. we're going to pick a game. Anyway, what a weekend, Rusty. We got lots to talk about. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl, of course. We got some great questions from the listeners. Someone we want to talk about you. We know your brother Jeff, of course, played and won a Stanley Cup in Edmonton. But we've never asked you about you facing off against him in games.
Oh yeah,
We want to. Yeah. That must be funny. We want to talk about that. Great question from someone. How do the wives handle these NHL players, Russ? Someone emailed and said, "I want to know. What's it like when you're married to an NHL player? It's got to be brutally tough and a lifestyle change for the wives to do it." So we want to find out how Paris handled it. I'm sure she laid down some rules and some law about,
because she actually was, I would say she was better equipped than most, because her mom, you know, her as a child growing up with a mom who was a star who traveled.
Right.
Had the those separations when her mom was on the road and traveled. So Paris actually, you know, it actually really helped. Mm-hmm. I think us, because of the separations. In fact, when I first retired, I was home. Obviously I'm home every day. Yeah. And about October, November, she goes, do you think you want to go on a road trip with your
come
buddies
out of retirement.
Or go golfing or do something? Like, she was like, oh my God, you're around me every freaking day and I can't stand it. So we kind of laugh about it, but nah, she was equipped for it. And we got married later in back in my era, I got later married later in my career, where I guess the guys today don't, a lot of them get married late. But when I played, guys were 22 sitting across from me. I'm 25 years old. And Sylvain Lefebvre, Montreal, had freaking, I'm 25. He's 23 at the time. And he had three kids already.
Wow.
And I was single. I'm like, oh my God, I'm way behind. Anyways, it wasn't a big deal for Paris.
So when you started dating Russ, and then you say, well, I'm a hockey player, and maybe at what point you're going to get married, you get engaged or something, do you have to say, do you understand what you're getting into here as a hockey player?
Well, like, you're dating somebody who's high profile, obviously.
Right.
They're away.
And you're high profile. You know,
that's why, no, they're married. The girl is marrying. I'm talking about the girl now. The girl is marrying into somebody who's a professional athlete, high profile, because even the backup goalie's famous. And the travel, you get your summers off. It's a pretty good gig, and the lowest paid player is making a shitload of money. So there's a lot of give and takes, but the positives outweigh the negatives. I mean, it's fantastic.
So she bought in. She's like, okay, yeah, I get it. We'll make it work. And you have. Congratulations. How long have you guys been married?
20, this year will be 29 years. We had a quick engagement. So we met, we're friends for a year. She dated somebody, I dated somebody. During the first year we were had met, and we were talking on the phone, became very good friends over the phone. I'm in Montreal, she's in LA. And then we got engaged the following summer and married the year after. So it was like, boom, boom.
Great.
We start dating and got engaged right away, and kids right away. And man, that was, after Allie was born, we were sitting across from each other going, what the fuck have we got ourselves into? And no sleep. And, you know, you're looking at each other. And I remember we told Paul Coffey when they got pregnant, we told him the story, you know, the first 3-4 months,
right,
first child, sleep deprived, you're going to be looking at each other like, who the hell are you? And they're like, oh, we'll never do that. We'll never do that. And they called us right after their first fight and said, we just had that, that who the hell are you moment. Yeah. And we all laughed on the phone. They remembered after they had this drag out fight, you know, we were warned about this. Anyways, enough of this.
Well, I was just going to say my mother was really old fashioned. I got engaged. And my ex-wife now, she was in med school, and I changed the dates a few times. You know, I told my mom, we're going to get married, mom, and it's going to be a good sized wedding and celebration, and all that stuff. And she went, okay, don't change the date now, like a lot of people do. Okay. We got people planning. Anyway, 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later, I phone her, mom, we got to change the date. Okay. The exams are at a different time.
Oh, jeez.
And she goes, okay. Last time. There's nothing that will get in the way of changing the date. Okay. She said, there can't possibly, are you sure? I said, yeah, got it all. Month later, I phoned my mom. I said, mom, she goes, don't tell me. I said, yeah, we got to change the date. There cannot be she's pregnant. All right. Change the date. Yeah. Kablam. Anyway. Yeah. I remember I was a stay-at-home dad. With our first daughter who's now 24. So it's that long ago. I was a stay-at-home dad, and we called it. So Allison was in school all day and I was at home all day, and she affectionately referred to the kids now, because if you're with that kid all day, Russ, you know, when you're home, it's just like, it's not like you don't need to be sharp about it or have a big brain, but it's mindless, long, long work all day. Yeah. We used to call the kids the hot potato, because when someone else, when they returned home from the day, you just threw the kid at the other one and go, okay, I'm out for a couple hours. Anyway, let's talk about Rusty, the Super Bowl. What'd you think?
Oh, man. I don't know why I freaking bet against the GOAT, but I did. So my bets, I lost them all. I even lost the freaking coin toss. First time I ever bet the coin toss, I thought it'd be fun. And freaking,
right.
It's in the air. I'm going, no, heads. It's going to be heads. I picked tails. Anyways, that's where it started for me, and it didn't end. But I, you know, losing the bet was losing the bet. But seeing a guy, you know, seeing him at that age win again, I mean, and just they pounded them. I mean, Right. Their defense was great. They just didn't give Kansas City, they didn't get any time on offense. They covered well. I mean, it just I looked at the – I'm new to all this. Right. I'm watching the Super Bowl, but I have obviously background in professional sports, and I'm going, we're done. Like in the first 5-10 minutes of the game, I'm going to lose every single bet. There's we're done. And I actually Venmo'd my son the money to pay for our bet.
Right.
Halfway through the game, before the game was over, I go, I hate to be a downer, but we're not going to win. They're getting crushed at right. every level. Here's right. the money to pay off our debts.
Right.
But I thought, you know, I was happy for him. I mean, I am. I'm happy that he won. So my wife's not a big fan, but I thought it was great.
I mean, you've been around great athletes your whole life, Russ. If anyone was going to get shut down going into that game, you know, people were every Super Bowl is tons of hype, right? They said there's yeah. tons of hype. It's going to be the best game ever, blah, blah, blah. They always say that. But it wouldn't – I guess it might not have surprised everybody if Tom Brady got shut down the way Mahomes did, okay? Then it'd be mm-hmm. all, well, he's old. He tried, you know, good for him. Mm-hmm. But this Mahomes getting smothered,
okay? Yeah.
Getting absolute smothered. And listen, if it wasn't for him, I mean, how many times he ran out of the pocket with guys draped all over him and getting rid of balls, any other quarterback would have got sacked. It could have been 70-0, you know?
Yeah.
The equivalent, though, Russ, because I thought about it yesterday, so I got to ask Courts about this. That guy getting shut down, Russ, would be the comparable thing would be shutting down Mario Lemieux or Wayne Gretzky in a series?
Yeah. Huh? Jordan.
Jordan? Yeah. Like it just
it was unbelievable. But here, okay, let's back up the tape. And I'm betting with my friends, right? And I'm new to all this, so I'm just like, what do you guys think? What do you guys think? And then I wasn't thinking at all. I was just waiting for what they were gonna tell me to bet, and then I just think about how much money I'm gonna bet, and we're all right. together and it's fun. And but then I started thinking, I'm like, okay, he was concussed in the last 3 weeks or 4 weeks.
Yep.
He's got he's getting toe surgery after the game.
Turf toe.
Because he's got turf toe. The coach's son killed two kids in a freaking car accident after practice. Between those things, and it's an away game, what the hell was I thinking that they had a freaking chance?
Well, he's good.
No, but concussions, you don't just because he's out on the field and he's playing, he's not 100%. There's no freaking way. You do not heal that quick.
Right.
And the turf toe, I've never had it, but if you get a bad toe, it's like the guy, and he did run. He made some nice runs and stuff. Mm-hmm. But all those things I should have known as an athlete going that the bet should be going the other way.
Yeah, you're looking at hindsight.
No, of course, but I'm giving you my example. I do not think about the bet. I think about how much I'm going to bet. My buddy tells me what to bet. I never put any thought into the game. I'm just right. sitting there waiting for the text. What are we doing? And I heard, you know, the Chiefs. I asked a couple buddies. They're going, I'm betting on the Chiefs, but you shouldn't bet against Brady, the GOAT. Every guy who I, anyways. And so you could be right on the hindsight, but I'm just telling you as a better, I'm a rookie, and I didn't. I just go with my friends and right. And bet. What they bet. So all the blame's bet. It's on you, Mike Shanahan, as you're walking your baby granddaughter right now, listening to us that right. we lost. It's all your fault, Mike Shanahan Jr.
There you go. So you don't have any take, Russ, on, you know, like no one could believe it was happening, you know, down after down after down after down.
Oh, that was unbelievable. And the other was the reffing sucked. I mean, they were calling. It was so obvious.
Right.
It was 8-1 at one point, and then they called a couple at the end just to make it look good. But I saw that freaking ref on my TV. I saw him more than I saw Brady. I mean, it was a joke. And then the Chiefs, too, they made a couple, you know, mental mistakes. But
right.
the reffing was definitely one-sided.
Anyway, good for him. 7 Super Bowls, Russ.
Yes, with the MVP good for again. Him. Good for the refs. Hopefully the refs get rings, too.
Yeah. speaking of, before we get to the refereeing, because there was a big schmozzle yesterday. I don't know. Did you follow the story in the Blue Jackets game where they were clearly offside and yet they missed it and allowed the goal? And then they came back after and said, we made a mistake.
Oh, God.
So we're going to, they gave him a delay of game penalty. They started doing that because Stevie was telling me today that, you know, they would just call for a review or a challenge so they can get a timeout, right? And go, oh, we're wrong. All we lose is a timeout. But they've changed that now. It has been for a while that you get a delay of game penalty if you're wrong.
So they said, no. Welcome to Earth, Jim. Welcome to
Earth. Well, they say.
Breaking news, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, but not everyone follows. Everyone who listens to us, Russ, they're not, you know, I'm just filling in the hot. Yeah, maybe they're not so much hockey fan.
Okay. You know? Good one. Good. That was quick. But that was a quick. That was a good comeback by you.
See, good snappy comeback.
Yeah.
You know what I'm missing here? I haven't heard the White Claw. Did you snap one or not?
I've already had one, and I got another one right here.
I don't know why. I know it's coming. You know, I know it's coming.
But back, we gotta go. We gotta go back to the bet. The best.
I know.
Bet
I'm going to.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. I got this all set up here. So
sorry. I'm not a mind reader.
Yeah, clearly, you'd need a mind to be a mind reader. Oh, good one, Jim. So bets, prop bets, you can bet, everyone knows this now, you can bet who's going to score first, who's going to win the game, of course, the big one. What's the halftime score? What's the coin toss? You know, they've got weirder and weirder, right?
Lower your, the one I heard was which coach would lower his mask first?
Fantastic. Yeah. Color, the other one I heard this year, what color is the Gatorade going to be that they dump on the winning coach?
Oh, never heard of that.
So here's a bet you could have made. Okay, this is the best. This is absolutely great. The best.
This is so good.
This is from, do you know this guy, Big Frank?
No.
Okay. So Rusty got this text and farted to me right away, and I almost threw up. Okay, I started laughing. So I got stages of laughing, Russ. Okay,
yeah,
giggling with a little bit of spit if I'm really laughing hard. Okay, then it's the blowing a bubble out of your nose if I'm really laughing. The third stage is bending over at the waist. Okay, when something's really funny, but the most funny is a bit of a dry heave because I start to laugh so hard. Okay,
yeah.
And this one caught me today. Oh,
it's the best.
Here we go.
Set the stage.
Okay. From my buddy Big Frank, it says, quote, met the Super Bowl streaker at Jay Alexander's restaurant. I didn't know there was a streaker last night. I didn't know.
At the end, yeah.
I met the Super Bowl streaker at the Jay Alexander's restaurant while having lunch before leaving Tampa. He bet $50,000 on a prop bet at plus 750 to one. That there would be a streaker at the Super Bowl. His buddy went out first as a diversion, so he didn't get caught as quickly as his friend. Cost him $1,000 to get out of jail, so he cleared $374,000. What a brilliant idea.
And this guy, Big Frick, is with the streaker in the restaurant. There's a picture, but... You guys, everyone who's on Instagram will probably see this by the time the show airs. But the guy's got his shirt off, waving it, and the guy's pointing at him. Oh, my God, that is.
I wonder if that's really true. Yeah.
Well, it is. That sure looks like the guy that streak. I mean, that's. How about the bookie reading that? The guy who just forked over $374,000. I hope he got the money before he put that out there.
Right. Yeah, it's hilarious, but they must have thought, okay, if we're going to take a bet on a streak of that kind, someone will streak. Someone, the guy who made the bet will streak, but maybe they don't think about it, you know.
But since 9/11 and now with COVID, the security is, I can't remember the last time I saw a streaker at an event. Can you? They used to be
football. A couple. They always show one from a Blue Jay game that someone ran onto the mound.
Like recently? No, I'm talking about recently. In the last,
not recently. No. The last one I remember that everyone does that went viral was a guy at a Calgary Flames game, naked, climbing up over the end glass. Russ, ouch, you know how high that
is. Ouch.
Yeah. And he nutted himself trying to straddle it to get over. Yeah. How about you? All those years you played, Russ. Any crazy fan stuff that happened during the game?
The funniest one was back when Eric Lindros got drafted by the Quebec Nordiques and he refused to play for Quebec and he wanted to be traded. We're skating around for warm up or the anthem when we just get out on the ice. So it's Montreal Canadiens at Quebec City, and we're skating around, and this guy dresses up like Eric Lindros with the 88 jersey on and jumps out on the ice and starts skating around.
No, he did.
with the team, and everyone's looking at this guy, and he had the curly dark hair, and then they kicked him off the ice. But that was probably the funniest one.
God, people are funny, eh? They can be.
Yeah, they can be, yeah.
Rusty, I got to tell you a great story. But
Never start off the story that you've already told us. It's a great story. Let us decide.
Have you ever been to a Super Bowl, Russ?
No, I have not.
Okay. Oh, you haven't. Okay.
No.
You've been to the Masters, though.
Yeah, I went with Pard, my buddy.
Yeah, right, your buddy.
My dad.
So here's two great stories, Rusty. About I said it again, okay? Because they're not mine, so they're going to be great.
Okay.
How to get the best tickets for the big event. Okay. How to get the best tickets for a Super Bowl and how to get them for, I've heard this work from the same guy who did it at a Stanley Cup game 7.
Okay.
So you go to the arena game 7, you're going to go about an hour before. And there's a litany, a million scalpers out there selling tickets, and they're big, they're expensive. Okay. Lots of them. And you're going to pay in the thousands, okay? I remember being at the Olympics for the gold medal game. So I was with Glenn Gretzky, and someone offered us 15,000 for our tickets, Russ.
Oh,
yeah,
that 15 must grand. Have been a tough decision.
I said, Glenny, he goes, I can't do this. They're through Wayne and Hockey Canada and stuff like that.
still a tough decision.
Believe me, Rusty. I didn't think I was going, okay, I'm running out of blow and I need some scotch.
Jesus.
So anyway, what you do, Russ, is they will always be caught with some tickets that nobody bought. They'll have cheap seats. The game's underway. It's about 10 minutes in, and now these scalpers are out there selling off cheap tickets, okay, which is the first smart thing if you're going to go. Go late, and you're going to get cheap. So maybe you got to pay $500, Russ, for tickets that are normally standing room only or something, okay? Maybe you got to pay $500 for the pair. So you buy the $500 tickets, and they're way up in the rafters. What you do, Rusty, walk into the arena, and you walk down at the end of the first period. You walk right down to the ice, you turn around and look up. You're at center ice, Rusty. Red line, you look up, and you're always going to see two kids in really good seats. They're going to be young, 13-year-old kids or younger, 14 years old, and they're kids of some corporate executive who ended up at the game. Okay, so you go to those kids right away, and you say, listen, you guys, we're going to give you $500 cash for your seats. Okay, now, you got tickets. We'll give you our tickets. Okay. Yeah. They're not as good as yours, but we'll give you a $500 cash.
Okay.
They snap the money up so fast, Russ, and off they go running around the arena and because they don't give a shit. Okay.
Right.
They don't give a shit. So there you go. For $1,000, Russ, you're getting $10,000 tickets.
I like it.
Good story, huh?
Yeah. I still wouldn't pay $1,000 to go watch a sporting event.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't, but I'm telling you, it'll work.
No, that's good.
Yeah, good.
Another one I heard when Vancouver first built the arena, the new arena, GM place. These guys told me. They said we used to sneak into your games all the time. I'm like, sneak into our games? He goes, yeah, we would. It was underground parking, and he said we would drive down and we'd tell the guy, hey, we're just, my dad's here at the game. We're dropping off his car. He walked good from one. Work and then we're going to leave. And then they would park the car and they would go up the, they said there was a door open and they would walk all the way up the stairs, the fire escape stairs, all the way to the top and then come down and they were getting into the game for free. I think the first season.
Brilliant.
They're doing the same thing. Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. The other one I heard, you and I both know him, Billy Comrie, of course, who's both sons, Mike Comrie and Paul Comrie, played in the NHL. And now his son, Eric, is
with Winnipeg?
Jersey. Spartan? He got traded to Jersey.
Oh, he got traded.
Yeah, and he got a win the other night. They had a COVID problem. He was going to be a third guy, but he got in and had a great game. So Billy is... hilarious. I could go on all day about Billy Comrie stories. If you don't know, he's the guy who started the brick furniture store. And he goes with his brother, him and Freddie. They're in San Francisco in the Super Bowls there years ago. And they don't have any tickets. Okay. They had no plan to go to the Super Bowl. And Billy says to Freddie, come with me. I got an idea. And Freddie always says, every time you hear Bill say that, okay, you're going to get in trouble. Okay. Right. You're going to be in trouble. And Billy says, I got an idea. Okay, let's go. We're going to go to the Super Bowl. Long story short, he walks into the ticket office, okay, the main office of the San Francisco 49ers. And so DeBartolo is the owner. Billy has no idea who that guy is. He knows he's the owner, but he walks into the office, and there's a girl there. Can I help you? He said, yes, I'm just here to pick up my two Super Bowl tickets for the game. And she goes, okay, I need your name, right? And he goes, it's Bill Comrie, and this is my brother, Fred. Now, Freddie's telling the story. He's going, Bill, knock this shit off. We're going to get thrown in jail. And she looks through, of course, and goes, I'm sorry, there's no tickets here. And Billy says, oh, are you kidding me? Do you know what? Let me just, and pulls out a phone or something, or says, let me, can I borrow your phone? I just need to call Eddie. And she says, he goes, who, Eddie? He goes, Eddie. DeBartolo, the owner, a buddy of mine, he was supposed to leave some tickets here. And she goes, I'm sorry, sir, they're not here. And he goes, well, this is ridiculous. Okay, I got to get him on the line. And then there's a security guard there behind her and he's freaking out. He's going, are you kidding? He wouldn't do this to me. We're best buddies. And she goes, well, let me phone Mr. DeBartolo. And he stops and says, do you really want to bug him right now? Do you really? I'm just thinking about it. Do you really want to call him? When he's supposed to leave me tickets and maybe it was your mistake. Do you want to, right? And the security guy goes, whispers in her ear. And she goes, you know what, sir? Our mistake. Here you go. Okay. He gets the tickets, no Rusty. Way. Okay. No Not way. Only that, the security guy says, let me escort you to your seats. Okay?
Oh my God.
This is a true story. They walk up. They're on the box level, Rusty. They're walking behind all the boxes. The guy opens a door, and it's there's an empty box there, sweet. Okay, yeah. There's like two people sitting in it. It holds eight, and the guy says, here you go. Sorry about the mix-up, Mr. Comrie. Shuts the door, and they're sitting in a box, a private box. And 5 minutes later, the door opens, and there's a huge guy who comes in a black suit, and Freddie's going, oh, here we go. Here we go. We're done. We're done. Yeah. And the guy says, Mr. Comrie? And Billy goes, absolutely. And the guy said, listen, we see what happened here. And I know here there's the food that is laid out here for is hot dogs and hamburgers and stuff. But we'd like to know if we could make you a steak and some lobster. Right? He goes, what? Freddie's going, this is unbelievable. Anyway, the game goes on. Huey Lewis sings the anthem and he comes up after the halftime show or whatever after the anthem and sits with Billy and his buddy Freddie, his brother.
No. Yeah.
True story. True story. So if you've got cojones, Russ, if you've got big balls, I'm going to try. One day I'm going to try that. And see.
Yeah, that is a good story.
Well, how about the play? How about the play with, do you really want to bother him? Right now on this, you know, do you think he's got a little more on his mind?
Oh my God.
Anyway.
I could see my brother Jeff doing that. He was that kind of, he would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, Jeff is, well, both of you.
His nickname was the Duke of Discount, is the Duke of Discount. I mean, he'll call anybody for a favor.
He will?
If he's in Italy, he's going to call the Pope. Ask him for a favor.
Speaking of you and your brother, Jeff, thanks a lot to a bunch of people who we got to say hi to Matt Cressman. Thank you. Looks like Donnie Cadwell, Adam Henry, Tal Austin. Matt's from Texas. Nice. How about that? Greg Villieu is living in Panama, listening to the show. Bill Berkeley, another guy. So thanks a lot to everyone. One of the questions they asked Russ was, you and Jeff, of course, both played in the NHL. I've never asked you this. What was it like the first time you guys were on the ice together? Were you opposing teams or was it the same team?
Yeah, he was in Boston and I was in Toronto. And back then, players from opposing teams didn't talk to one another, didn't socialize, nothing. So we would, night before a game, I would go to his house or he'd come to mine. We'd have dinner together. And then if they stayed in town after the game, we'd hang out.
Right.
But we didn't see each other during the game day most of the time until we got probably older and more confident in our careers.
Right.
That they couldn't hold it against us. But the first game we played together, he had the cameraman at center ice, right at the Boston bench. Mm-hmm. And when we're skating around, you know, teams both come out and they just skate around in a circle, in either end and warm up. And we mm-hmm. both timed it and stopped right in front of the camera guy and took this picture of us like, stop. Kind of a smile and then kept going.
Right. Oh, cool.
Yeah. Cool. So we did that. That was, and it was enjoyable, you know, just seeing each other when we were playing, no cell phones back then. And we talked a lot on the phone.
Right.
And shared stories and stuff and shared ideas about the game and goalies. He had a lot to say about goalies. He was very knowledgeable on where to beat goalies. So he'd always give me a heads up on where to shoot on different guys and
not his own team though.
No, not his own team. Well, opposing teams. Yeah. Got to
bet on you guys tonight, Russ.
Yeah, what? No, but I played against him a lot because once I got to Montreal and they made me into more of a two-way player, and not just offensive. But I played with Guy Carboneau on the checking line or sometimes with Brian Skrudland. We always check the top line on the other team. So I got to play against him quite a bit because he was always on the number one or number two line, scoring line on the other team. So I played against him a ton. He was a left winger and I ended up being a right winger. So we always line up against each other, which was pretty funny.
I was going to say, was it weird? I mean, you must have laughed, the two of you, at the first face-off.
It was two things. Once both happened in Montreal. He came to hit me and I reversed hit him and knocked him on his ass. And he's like, you asshole, I wasn't going to hit you. And then the other story is we're playing, he's with Washington and he scored 42 goals, I think, that year. And he was playing with Dale Hunter. Anyways, Hunts hits me. And I'm falling backwards and I fake like I lose control of my stick and I hit him right over the head. He had wore a little thin Jofa helmet and I hit him right over the head with my stick and he freaking snapped. And there's a picture in the newspaper the next day and Jeff he's playing for Washington with Hunts. I'm in Montreal. He's got me in a headlock, my brother. And he's with it in his right arm and his left arm, he's holding Hunts back going, Hunts, he didn't mean to. And he goes, yes, he did. I'm going to kill him. And he goes, no, he didn't. And I'm just shitting myself because the guy was so freaking tough and mean.
Right.
But that he saved my ass that one day and he wasn't even playing. We weren't even playing together.
Right. What a great story.
We played a little bit together in Vancouver, a few months. I got traded to Vancouver and he was still there. We played together and didn't play on the same line, unfortunately, but we played together in the same team for a few months in Vancouver. It was a hell of a team too.
Right. You got, in this day and age, Russ, we talked about this story last week. I think it's D'Angelo, the kid who got shoved out of, got, got traded finally, didn't clear waivers.
Yeah. New York Ranger.
Yeah. There got to be more to the story about this guy. I haven't read anything since, but there was another one about a kid Bennett in Calgary kind of demanding a trade, not a superstar. Mm-hmm. And people are going, well, where is this kid getting off demanding a freaking trade? But it's happened, you know, Line 8 was going the other way to the Columbus deal.
Yeah.
So someone brought up a good question, I think, for you, Russ, because some of this shit can go sideways for these kids where they're kind of, I think you have also said in past shows that the players might be a little more entitled now, Russ, a little than they were back in the day. I said less respect and you said, no, don't say that. They don't, but, do they act a little more independently now, Russ, the player today than it was in your day?
Well, I know that the coaches have to be a little softer on guys. And then I talked to a couple of players that said, you can't really tease anymore. There's no teasing. Guys can't handle it. And he was talking about, he was saying it like, so when we're at Gosserm, we're all around all the old guys, you know, we're still ripping each other and having fun. The players, they just, they're like, if we couldn't do this, like you can't do this in the locker room anymore. You can't rip guys because some guys just can't handle it.
Right.
So the teasing part is really laid off. And I just, you know, to players, if they can't handle it, then they're, you know, I don't understand that because it was so much fun.
My guess would be because over the last several years, the awareness of bullying and that they're oversensitive now a little bit.
Yeah, right? Probably. Yeah. And political correctness on, you know, what you can and can't say. I mean, when we teased each other, the one thing that everyone said were kids were off limits, but your wives weren't. So there was no,
mothers weren't your mother.
Yeah. I remember a couple guys said something to a player about his son, Mats Naslund's son had his hair back in the mid to late 80s where you shaved half your head and then you had long hair on the other side, but you were completely shaved on the other side.
Yeah.
And there was some kid walking down the street and one of the players said, hey, Mats, what if your son came home with that haircut? And he goes, all that matters is what's on the inside, boys. but you didn't tease guys about their kids. You just didn't go there. But man, anybody else in the family was on limits.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
Back to the trading thing, and I've said this before, I did it and I regretted it, going public to try to get traded, and it didn't sit well for me for the rest of my career. Mm-hmm. And if I was to say anything to any of these young players, is just go in, have that face-to-face awkward meeting with the GM and state your case. You know, I think I should get traded because I don't fit into the coach's plans. Mm-hmm. I think I'm a better player than he has me playing. And if you can trade me, I would appreciate it. And in the meantime, I'm going to go out and work hard and bust my ass. And if you can't make a deal, you can't make a deal. But that's an awkward, that's a really, really tough conversation to have with your boss.
Right.
And then, you know, the coach is not going to like it because the GM is going to run down and tell the coach, like, what the hell you're doing with this? You know, you're not playing. Right. He thinks you don't like him. And then the shit's going to have to hit the fan. But it's a hell of a lot better than embarrassing the GM, the team, and the coach, everybody that you've gone to the media and said, I don't want to play here anymore. You just shouldn't do that. I think internally, internally you can do it, and your agent, that's what you pay him the big bucks for, is to help you. I always say to parents that ask my advice, the agent doesn't make the money negotiating the contract. The agent makes the money when the shit hits the fan and you've got a problem. And the better the agent, the quicker they can solve it, because if the agent has power, he can help with that. if you have an agent that is some lawyer from your hometown, they're not taking his call. Like, he's just not getting these. No GM is going to go, oh, would you want to talk about Johnny and all the problems he's having? Right. F off.
Right. Right.
And I told a parent this, and they didn't believe me. And then sure enough, their third round drafted son couldn't understand why he got sent down. And the Sutter was his GM or coach or somewhere. And I said, I told you.
Yeah.
Let me guess. The GM's not calling you back to tell you why your son didn't, you know, got sent down.
Right.
Because they hired some accountant, and you know, these hockey parents want to have the power over the agent. They don't want to have the agent have the power over them.
Right.
So they hire these weak, smart guys that have a freaking degree in something
other than agency.
Yeah.
God knows some of the old schoolers, you know, back in Brian Burke's day and Glenn Sather and those guys, you know, and Scotty Bowman and, you know, that crusty crowd, man, back in the days where they took no shit.
Yeah.
You might have on paper these really good stats, but you're not going to maneuver these guys. You know, you're not going to maneuver them, right?
And that's an intimidating conversation to have when a player wants to be traded. He's got to go upstairs to that office and meet with the GM and tell him that. And so going to the media is a lot easier than going, but it's the worst thing you can do. You got to go to the GM and you have to have that conversation.
Right. I think Brian Burke said when a guy walk into his office like that,
and it,
you know, the kid would be nervous and he'd say, can I get a word with you? And Brian'd say, come on in. And he'd say, before you open your mouth, if you're in here asking for a trade, okay, we're going to do it. And we're going to do it right as soon as you ask. Right. And the kids are, where am I going to go? Well, no, you know, your choices are over now.
Okay? Yeah.
If you want to fucking ask for a trade, be careful, because I will. Yeah. You know, I'll get ready. Yeah. What I was going to ask you, Russ, it's so that's on the trade thing. If you were to advise some of these young kids, you know, or kids who have made it to the NHL and are about to start their career as an NHL player, and by all indications, looks like they will have a long career. Mm-hmm. What would you tell those kids, Russ, before they played their first game? What to expect in the NHL? And what should they watch for? What should they plan for? What should they do and what shouldn't they do?
Well, I think the biggest thing is fitness is huge going into as soon as you walk in there, that door, you can't go back out and come back in. You're in. Mm-hmm. So now you're representing yourself. And then just listening and doing. Try to please the coach as much as you can and do exactly what they say. Even the tough things that you don't want to do, or maybe you're not accustomed to doing them. And then once you get established, I told Brett Hedekin, John
LeClair,
I said, you've been in the NHL for 3 years. Would you relax? You're now a 10-year vet, because you'll get recycled. If you're not good enough to play here, you're going to be good enough to play somewhere. Those first steps of becoming a pro and who you are, and you'll evolve. Like, I came in as a centerman and a high draft pick and was supposed to be offensive. And then I went to Montreal and they wanted to be more defensive, but I managed to do both. And I still got my points I was satisfied with and lots of playing time, because you're playing against the other team's best line. But I had to learn how to be a better defensive player. And so if I had said F off, no, then where, I don't know. Maybe that would have been it for me. So I think accepting, and we've, you know, like Marty talked about it, nobody starts playing hockey and wants to be a tough guy. Everybody wants to be a goal scorer. Everybody wants to be the best player. And normally they are growing up. And then all of a sudden you get the NHL and they're like, you're not driving the bus anymore. You're at the back fixing the tires. Mm-hmm. So if you want to play on this team, this is where you got to play. And so all these players, you know, they get moved around, and if you have an open mind and you're willing to work and accept everything and just keep chugging along. And then once you've been around for a while, then you can, you know, expand on it.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we were talking earlier in the show, where you were saying, you know, it was fun back in your day, mm-hmm. where you could tease each other, you know,
yeah,
you know, mercilessly and relentlessly, oh right? You could harp on a guy and there'd be no one better. No one would wear the C better than you would when it would come to that. If you want to hear some fantastic jabs and barbs that a guy could go back and listen to the interview we did with Marty McSorley.
Yeah.
Marty was on fuego, baby, with this.
I told my brother, Jeff, that Marty was on the show and he goes, I wish you guys had told me, I would have told this story. So Marty, Jeff and Marty won a cup together in Edmonton.
Yes.
And Jeff used to he used to run Marty all the time, you know, and Jeff was obviously he could fight, but not in Marty's weight class. He wasn't a heavyweight, but Jeff was freaking tough for his size and stuff. So, and he was dirty and all that. So he said in the old forum, second period. So Marty's team's at the visitor's end. He's behind the net and Jeff just came flying around and there was like seconds, he's standing behind the net. Like the clock's going to run out. Marty is standing straight up. Like the period's over, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But there's 3 seconds left and here comes Jeff and he goes, Marty's later tells the story to Jeff. He goes, there's no way you're going to hit me. There's no way. And Jeff hit him so hard. Marty went flying and it knocked the wind out of him. The buzzer sounds and the gates open right to the left of the goalie. If the goalie sits standing in the net, over to the left was where the visitors came and went. Or the other end. Anyways, doesn't matter what end. And Marty's laying on the ice. He gets up and he can barely move because he can't catch his breath.
Right.
And the gate opened and Jeff kept going. He didn't even stop.
The Roadrunner.
The third period, Marty is chasing Jeff all over the ice. I'm going to effing kill you. And Jeff just would laugh at him and skate away. And Marty couldn't get him. And they talked about it at the fantasy camp. And it was so funny. I forgot about that story, but. Anyways, Jeff was saying that Marty was just so pissed off.
Yeah.
And anybody who's watched hockey, you've seen a game or you see a game where the puck goes behind that, then the D-man just stands there and it's like 4, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Yeah, everyone calm down.
He's not gonna hit me. He's like 3, 2, 4.
Distraction and surprise, baby. Yeah.
Jeff was laughing so hard telling me that story.
that's hilarious, man. Anyway, go back and listen to the Marty story. Rusty, well, this is about our time allotment. We like to do this. We'll talk. Sorry, I couldn't get to all the questions. We'll tease you for next week. We'll make sure we ask Rusty, have you ever been on a team that quit playing for the coach? Good one. We'll talk about that next week and a bunch more. Congratulations to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Rusty, we got someone who's listening and they want to say hi and they're looking forward to seeing your son play in Wheeling. Is that where it is?
Yeah, Wheeling, West Virginia. Yeah. Scored the other night too.
He scored again?
Yeah, he's got his fourth goal.
Wow.
Yeah, he's got 4 in 12 games, so he's doing well.
Well, he must be getting advice from his uncle.
Yeah. Anyway,
good idea. Take it easy, everybody. Thanks for listening and thanks for telling all your friends about it. Go to our website. thesuspendables.com and everything's on there, the Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and all the shows are on there, so we invite you to go back and listen to those and check me out on our Facebook page for my nightly installments of Talking. Russ, I'm going to talk about you tonight, Russ. Walking and talking in the jungle. You're going to be the main subject tonight, Russ.
Jeez, can't wait.
If you get a chance, Rusty, grab a cocktail. See you later, everybody. Take it easy.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Courtnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.